Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to the Leaders Toolbox on Radio at Firehouse.com. We are here today with the host and Fire Chief Richard Gassaway. Chief, thank you for joining us for another edition of this show.
Thanks for having me.
If you do have any questions for Chief Gassaway, please send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Always looking for questions from officers and other members of the fire service out there. First question we have for you this month, Chief, is I am a lieutenant, a company officer for a medium-sized fire department in Kentucky. In October, I moved to a different shift and just recently had a sixth-year firefighter return to full duty following a knee injury. I just recently had to do a six-month performance review with that particular firefighter. These reviews are meant to look at the goals, objectives, and areas of improvement outlined in their previous annual performance evaluation and their progress or lack of improvement. This particular firefighter had a glowing review from his former supervisor, not a fire service leader by any means, and had no goals and objectives for the next evaluation period outlined. He also had no specific areas listed for improvement. In my short time with this firefighter, I have not seen any glowing behavior from this firefighter since he has come back to duty. He constantly complains about training and work around the station, for example, cleanup and inspections. And he says he has to take a nap every day so that he can function 100% at night. In the evaluation, I gave him the benefit of the doubt and stated he had recently come back to duty after being on light duty and has to adjust to his new supervisor and leader. I went on to say that if his annual evaluation was conducted today, he would not receive the same high marks he received last year. His response to me was that he gets the work listed on the weekly cleanup schedule done, and that is 100% of the work required for him to do in a day, and he obtains 100 training hours per year, which is required for the state firefighter incentive. Going above and beyond, that is not his job, and that he only has to obtain 100 hours and nothing more. In other words, this firefighter is just average and prefers mediocrity. How do I get this firefighter to go above and beyond the average, and did I handle this six-month review in the right manner? I want to be a good company officer and be considered a leader instead of just a supervisor, but every time I hit brick walls like this one. Can you help me?
Well, he has a lot of things going on in this scenario. One, I don't know how long he's been a supervisor, and in relation to the person who was the previous supervisor. And sometimes when you're a newer supervisor, you're challenged to make your mark in your organization, and sometimes you can get overzealous in your efforts to try to bring about change and make your organization the best it can be. So just a word of caution there is if you want to have an organization that it's very best, that's good, but that's a team effort. That's not an individual effort. And I would be curious as to see how his fellow officers and supervisors feel about that general philosophy in the organization. Now, about the review. A review is just what it says that it is. It's a review. There shouldn't be any new information in a performance review. And nothing should be a surprise to an employee in a performance review. A review is simply to go back over and visit the feedback that you've given to your employee over the previous period of time. In other words, if you are supervising somebody and their performance is less than your expectation, it's not fair to them to wait until the review to give them that feedback. You should give them that feedback when it happens. And then if you want to bring it up in the course of the review to say, back on this date, we talked about this and I noticed that there was an improvement, then that's positive feedback from the review. Or you say, back on this date, we talked about this, and since then I've noticed that there hasn't been an improvement, and this is something that would go on the list that needs to be worked on. To this officer, if you've not observed this employee's performance for the review period, and you said it was, I think, 6 months, then you're really not in a position to give him a fair review of his performance, because if he's been off work, you really don't know what his performance has been like. And observing someone's performance for a short period of time and then drawing some conclusions about that being their general performance may not be a fair evaluation, especially if he's just coming back off of being on leave from a knee surgery. It might take him a little bit of time to get, you know, back into the saddle and back into the groove. So if you didn't observe the full performance period, then you might not be giving him the fairest evaluation. It's water over the dam, but one of the things that you could have done was to review this employee's previous performance evaluation before he came back to work. If you knew he was going to come back onto your shift or you were going to come onto his shift, is look at his previous performance review before he comes back. That way, you know what was written about him by his previous supervisor, and you would have known that there were no goals and no improvement plan listed, and then you could have sat down with him and set some goals and talked about things that you would want done at the next, by the next time you do the next performance review. But that opportunity was missed. Some people don't need written goals or areas of improvement to know, you know, what a good job means. They seek out their own opportunities and they show self-initiative to perform at a high level on their own. They don't need anybody to tell them or show them what good work looks like. But for others, performing above a minimum expectation may not be something that they're interested in, and it may not be something that they're aware of what expectations are or how to go about performing in a way that exceeds the expectations of a supervisor. So you shouldn't really assume that people that are working for you will somehow automatically know what your expectations are and then how to meet them and how to exceed them. That is something that you really need to communicate. And for so much as you might think, well, it's obvious or it's common sense. Well, common sense isn't all that common, and things that are obvious to one person are not so obvious to another person. So if you want people to know what you expect of them, then you need to communicate that to them. I'm not sure I would have made the comments that you did about if this were his annual evaluation, you wouldn't have, you know, given him such good marks. Because I think that kind of maybe sets him up to be defensive, or maybe even leads him to believe that you have some issue with him before you've had the opportunity to really observe his performance over a period of time. So I think I would have reserved that comment and not. You know, you're kind of telling him what the future might hold for him without really giving him the benefit of the doubt of seeing his full performance. So, and just know you might have done a little damage there that you might have to go back and do some damage control on. If I were you, I would meet with him and set some goals and some areas for improvement now. Even though you missed that opportunity before he came on shift, it's not too late to sit down with him now and set some goals and some areas for improvement. If you can extend his evaluation date beyond when it would, you know, normally be the annual evaluation to give yourself a full 6 months to see his performance, that would be best. If not, then only set goals and areas of improvement that can be accomplished from the time you meet with him until his next evaluation. In other words, don't give him 6 months of goals and ambitious things to accomplish and then give him a performance review, his annual review, in another 2 months, because you're really just setting him up to fail if you do that. You may want to ask him to identify or offer some goals or areas of improvements independently of what you think they should be, and just see what he comes up with. And that'll be a good test for you, is to try to understand what he thinks good performance looks like. And that would give you a pretty good indication as to some of the motivation behind the employee that you're working with. You may want to also set out your expectations for him. You know, if you haven't communicated to him what your expectations are, how would he possibly know? It's very likely that the old supervisor and you don't share the same expectations of their subordinates. You had kind of alluded to the previous supervisor not really being the best of leaders. Well, if he wasn't the best of leader for this person, then maybe he didn't do a good job of setting expectations. So this person comes to work for you with low expectations because that's what his previous supervisor had instilled in him. You should also, I think, provide him with some examples of what good and better and best performance looks like. Let's go with an example. And let's just say that you're going to rate somebody on a 1 to 5 scale in a performance. And the example that I'm going to use is, let's just hypothetically say you're going to evaluate a person who washes cars. So we'll just take it completely out of the fire service and make it an entirely neutral example. Okay, so level 1 being their worst performance, and level 5 being the greatest possible performance that you could give. So if you were using this example with him, you might say, you know, level 1 performance, you know, which would be, you know, the very bottom performing evaluation score, a person who's given an assignment to wash a car would maybe knock the big clumps of dirt off the car with their boot. You know, so did they clean the car? Yeah. To your accepted standard, no. It's definitely way below expectation performance. So they'd get a 1. A person who'd get a 2, which would be like marginally acceptable work, maybe they take the car to the car wash, or they hand wash the car, but they leave a lot of dirty spots on it. So, yeah, they made an effort, but they didn't, you know, the outcome really wasn't good because the car isn't really clean. So maybe they get a 2 because they did put some effort into it. 3 would be average performance. Let's just say a person who, in this example, gets a level 3, they would wash the car, they would dry the car, and there'd be no unwashed spots, and all the water spots would be dried off the car. So this person is an average performer. They met your expectation. They did what was asked of them. They washed the car, dried it, it's clean, no water spots. Then you have a person who would be performing above average. What would an above average performance look like? Well, this person would probably, if given the assignment, they'd probably wash the car, vacuum the interior, and clean the interior dash, and clean the inside windows with some window cleaner, and make sure that there were no streaks on the windows. So this person would, you know, do everything wash, dry, no unwashed spots, no spots on the outside of the car, vacuum it, clean the interior, clean the inside windows. So clearly they went above and beyond what the expectation was. So you'd give them a 4 and say, you know, that was really above what was expected. That's good performance. Now, what would it take for somebody to get a 5, you know, an outstanding rating of performance? Well, maybe if you gave this person the assignment to wash a car, they'd wash the car and they'd wax it and they'd polish the rims and they'd vacuum the interior and they'd clean the dash and they'd wash the windows and maybe even put something like Rain-X or something that would help repel the water on the window. So, you know, this person really goes way above and beyond what the expectation is without being told to do all of it. They were simply asked to wash the car, but yet they give this high level of performance. Now, what separates these people is motivation. You know, where's the motivation at each of these levels? And that's for you to, you know, to figure out and assess what, you know, what motivates a person to perform at a level 1 or a level 3 or a level 5. And usually, you know, those people that perform at a level 5 are looking for some kind of gratification, whether it's a self-gratification or recognition or appreciation from their superior. You describe this guy as somebody who would work for somebody who wasn't much of a leader. So if that's the case, I'm going to guess that that previous leader probably didn't do much to create an environment of motivation for this person. So when this person did above and beyond what was expected of him, maybe it was never noticed or recognized or any appreciation shown for it. So he has learned to be average or even marginal in his performance. I think you said mediocre. You know, maybe that's a learned behavior. behavior based off of how the environment that he has worked in with his previous boss. So give him the benefit of the doubt that, you know, maybe at one time he was really that person who strived to be a five, but over the course of time has been beaten down to level two or level three performance. I don't know that you can force or expect an employee to be to perform above and beyond. It sure is nice when someone's highly motivated and they perform above and beyond, but in every organization, just like in schools, you have A players, B players, C players, D players, and hopefully if you have F players, that they're not with your organization very long, that you find a way to weed them out of the organization. But in school, teachers do their best to help kids learn to make good grades, but in the end, it's really up to the kids to perform and have ownership and be responsible for their own grades and to create their own motivation. You know, motivation, it's an inside job. You can't create motivation within somebody, but I think you can create an environment where people want to be motivated and want to perform above expectations. And a lot of that has to do with showing appreciation for the work that they do. Maybe if you catch him, you know, doing just small things that are above and beyond, and it's, you know, it's just a small feat, give him some recognition and say, thanks for that, for doing that. You know, that might be the attention that he's been starved to have, and you might see him, you know, perk up and start to come to life and realize that, you know, somebody out there really does appreciate what I'm doing. I think people inherently want to do a good job, but either they don't know how or they don't understand what the criteria is that defines what a good job is. Because if you take two people and you say, you know, washing a car, what's a good job? Well, you know, one person would describe maybe level three performance, wash it, dry it, and leave nothing, you know, leave no dirty spots. And somebody else might describe level four or level five performance. Well, who's right and who's wrong? It's the perception of that person. And, you know, you might be dealing with somebody who really just doesn't understand what, you know, doing a good job means. In the end, as much as you might want to have above average performers on your team, if you set the criteria for what average is or what above average is, and this employee chooses to perform at the average level or below, then you need to let him know that his performance evaluation will reflect ratings that are average or below. And you know, in the end, he owns that performance and he owns the results of those performance reviews. Ratings for above average and excellent performance are earned, and he should be told that. And he should know from your discussion with him what above average and what excellent performance looks like. And when you see him doing it, reward him.
Can you... I guess for the new officer, looking at the this firefighter's former officer and not seeing him as a shining example of a company officer, any advice on how to approach the former officer to kind of get his feedback on the previous evaluation without kind of stepping into his old boots?
Well, I think there's this can go both ways, Pete. It can be advantageous and it can be disadvantageous. It depends on how the relationship that these two officers have with each other and whether the other officer would see this officer as questioning his evaluation skills or questioning his rating of the other employee's performance. So, you know, there's some risk there to talking to the other officer. If he has a good relationship with him, I think he could just maybe casually in passing say, you know, what was this employee like when he worked for you? What, you know, what was his, what were his strong qualities? What were his weak qualities? You know, what things, what advice could you give to me that I could, you know, pass along with him to help him improve his performance. One of the things about performance evaluations that I have observed is sometimes supervisors want to be friends more than they want to be bosses. And this is especially true in the fire service because you spend a lot of time in the company of the people that you work with. And maybe even off the job, you spend a lot of time with them. Maybe they're your fishing buddies and hunting buddies. And when you're at work, you just want everybody to get along. And you tend to overlook those performance areas that might be less than acceptable because you want, first and foremost, a harmonious relationship, and secondarily, good work performance. So I find some supervisors are willing to overlook a major aspect of their job, and that's making sure that everybody is performing up to an expectation level, because they want to have that camaraderie and that friendship, and it's more important to them. So that might be some of what was in play with this other officer in the employee before. Is he didn't want to give that person an honest evaluation because that person's friendship or their acceptance of this officer might have been more important to him than being honest in the feedback. And it sounds like this officer is one who wants to put his obligations and his duties as an officer ahead of that of being, a friendship. And I'm not saying you can't have friendships and be friendly with your employees, but when you're the boss, you're the boss, and the employee's the employee, and the performance is the performance. And if the performance doesn't meet an expectation, then that employee needs to be accountable for that. And it doesn't you don't have to be mean-spirited when you talk with somebody about improving their performance. You can do it in a very friendly way, but in a way that also conveys that there is an expectation, and it is your job to make sure that everybody who works for you performs to a certain level.
What about with this guy, this lieutenant coming into his new shift? What about having him sit down with the crew or crews and kind of set the level, what they're looking for, what he's looking for as an officer with his crew, what he's expecting out of them, what he's not expecting, etc. But not rocking the boat, saying, "I'm the new guy. I'm in charge, and here's what we're going to do. I don't care if this guy did it this way. Now this is how we're going to do it." How do you expect, or what's some advice as far as a new officer in that position?
I think anytime a new officer comes into a new shift or is newly promoted, they should sit down with the people that they're going to be supervising and say, "Okay, we're the team. What is it that we can accomplish as a team? What can we do together? What goals do we want to have, and how do we want to go about accomplishing them?" And there's a lot of wisdom to doing that, Pete, because if it will be interesting to see if he sat down with the whole crew. Sometimes you build a synergy around the ideas and the energy of the entire shift. And if this guy who's the marginal average performer kind of got the sense that everybody wants to do an above average job, and they display that in this shift meeting, then this guy could get the idea that he's a minority among a group of peers. And if he wants to maintain, good relations and good friendships with these people, that he might have to step up his performance. But when this officer has this meeting with the group, I would encourage him to only ask a few questions and really let the group talk about what their goals and aspirations are and how they want to better themselves and do training above and beyond, and let a little bit of that peer influence help to have this firefighter see that it isn't just the officer who wants to be, above average and to do an excellent job. It's the whole shift, and that might compel him to want to improve his performance because he wants to get along with the people that he works with.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll come right back after a quick break, and we'll take another question from one of our listeners.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox on Radio at firehouse.com. Your host is Fire Chief Richard Gassaway. Again, if you do have any questions for the chief, please send an email to podcast@firehouse.com, or you can leave a comment at the bottom on the podcast player page. And for those of you downloading from iTunes, you can access radiofirehouse.com to access the comment section of the podcast player page. Chief, the second question We are having a real morale problem in our department because some members went out and bought their own helmets to wear, the leather type, and others have placed decals on their helmets to show their pride for serving as a firefighter. Now the administration has issued an edict that no one can use personally owned gear and all decals must come off the helmets. What gives? Is it really a big deal, or is he just trying to destroy our morale on purpose? Help me understand this.
Well, I have to say that I've seen this issue come up a number of times in fire departments, and there are a variety of explanations for what might be in play here. First, the department's administration is charged with the responsibility of ensuring that the firefighters' gear meets national standards, namely NFPA, maybe in some instances OSHA. If the department purchases and issues equipment that doesn't meet the standard, they can be held liable if that equipment would fail to operate properly and that failure contributed to a firefighter's injury or death. Equally, if the department allows its members to use equipment that they purchased on their own, the department no longer has control over what is purchased or how it's maintained. Yet the department will still carry all the liability if someone gets hurt using the equipment that doesn't meet standards or equipment that might be in poor repair. Any department, Pete, that has ever had a serious firefighter injury or death can attest to the fact that state and federal investigators and maybe even private and insurance investigators will be looking at that department's records with a fine-tooth comb trying to uncover anything that could have contributed to the casualty. And the fire department's gear is often among the first things that they're going to look at and try to rule out as a contributing factor. The department can't be in a position where it's responsible and liable for a person's personally owned equipment, whether it meets the standards or not, and how it's maintained after it's put in service. So to that extent, for this firefighter, I hope that they better understand that when the administration says only department-issued equipment, that there is a good, sound legal reason behind that decision. You may still want to wear your own stuff, but understand that there's a good reason for the department to say only wear department-issued stuff. Secondly, the department administration may be concerned about the decals because those decals could send the wrong message to coworkers or to the general public. A smart administrator isn't going to want to put him or herself in a position of being the decal police, meaning they're not going to want to be the ones determining which decals are permitted and which ones aren't permitted. For example, let's say a decision is made that you allow everyone goes home decal, or a 9/11 will never forget decal. Those seem fairly uncontroversial. But what happens if someone affixes a decal to their helmet for another cause that may not be fire service related, and maybe that decal is offensive to someone? Or what if the decal said something that was just plain inappropriate to be worn on an on-duty firefighter's helmet? Like, for example, firefighters, find them hot and leave them wet. You know, that might be the kind of thing you'd wear on a t-shirt when you go out with your buddies on a Friday night, but it's not acceptable on a firefighter's helmet. As innocent as it might seem to have a decal on a helmet, it can bring a lot of legal issues for the department that can come in as employer or member rights and their freedoms of speech and their freedoms of expression. If an administrator allows some expression of opinion on helmets and denies other expressions of freedoms of opinion and expression on helmets, then that might bring a legal battle to the department. I think the safest route for this administrator is to deny all the decals and to put the department not put the department in a position that's going to attract litigation. I understand that firefighters are proud of what they do, and I also understand that individuals want to express themselves, but put the decals on your car and leave them off your helmet.
What about the decals that you'll see on the apparatus? And everyone goes home is more acceptable than no fear or, New York City Fire Department, for instance. They had an issue after an incident in Firehouse where drinking was involved. The company was called Southern Comfort. So the city examined all the company logos. One was Happy Hookers because... truck company. Another was the Nut House because they historically ate peanuts in the firehouse and left the shells on the floor. So you have company logos, and then once you brand those on the apparatus, again, if it's above and beyond or maybe down and dirty and you don't want to show that, that's understandable. But does that or where does that fall in as a chief officer, Engine 3, the best in the West? How does that fall into this?
Well, I think what is in play here, Pete, is you have to weigh the internal department's desire to have an expression of their individuality and who they are and how they want to be branded internally to how the organization is branded and marketed and perceived externally. You know, some of the examples that you gave me, like the Nut House, and you talk about, because they ate peanuts and left the shells on the floor. Well, if you're John Q. Public out in the street, you don't know that that's how they became known as the Nut House or the Happy Hookers. If you're on the truck company and you're always hooking ceilings and you enjoy what you're doing, you're a happy hooker. But for John Q. Citizen out on the street to see Happy Hookers on the side of a truck or a T-shirt or a decal, certainly could raise some issues about what the intended message is. And I think that we all know that things like this can carry dual messages, and that's why some people are attracted to certain sayings like that, because they know that they can carry dual messages, and those are kind of the catchy little jingle things that become company logos and T-shirts and such. But in the end, it's the image of the department and the community's confidence in their fire department and what they do and how they do it. And you don't want to do things that raise speculation about what your department is about. So the message always has to be a clean, consistent, above-board message that doesn't leave any doubt in the community about what you're intending it to mean. If you can look at a message and it can be taken two ways, and one of those ways is not within the social norms of society, then I think it's best left off of a fire truck and off of a T-shirt that you would wear on duty and off of a patch and off of a helmet decal. And, there are a lot of really neat and creative T-shirts and decals and logos and patches out there that express a lot of passion for what we do, but don't raise an eyebrow and bring that kind of controversy to our profession.
Okay. All right. Again, this was the Leader's Toolbox. Host Fire Chief Richard Gassaway. Any questions, comments, suggestions for the show, please send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com, or you can leave a message in the comments box at the bottom of the podcast player page. And also check out richgassaway.com for more on the show's host. Chief, thank you for joining us again this month, and we'll see everybody again sometime in April.
Thank you for having me.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, And stay tuned to Firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.